Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well and, made it through the weekend with everything still working. Hope the pipes and, pets. If you had any plants out in that, forget about those. But, I mean, it was my
– They're firewood now?
Goodness, it was cold. They're yeah. Whatever happens to – they're melted icicles. But, yeah, it was crazy. I mean, looked out and I have a little a little bird bath out the back window, and it looked like something out of a nice calendar picture with frozen icicles.
It looked
hanging
like a snow
off
globe.
Of
it looked like the inside of a snow globe. Yeah, no, Bill. I heard you were doing figure eights and triple sow cows and.
Hey, I'm concerned a little bit. We lost power on Wednesday. I looked out and. The Polaris wasn't running, and I went out, and the pump was getting no power. And we haven't been able to get anybody out. That's not a top priority that your pool pump isn't running, but there are exposed pipes, so they're all wrapped. They've got blankets and plastic and all kinds of stuff wrapped around them. The pool isn't frozen, and I hope to God the pipes aren't. So. But, it was one of those, bitterly cold, but we were, a piece of cake here compared to a lot of places further north of us. How was your weather, Dan?
Oh, I had a blast, dealing with some of that. It was cold. It's great to be back, but we were up in Huntington, West Virginia on Tuesday and Wednesday to play Marshall, and then we flew to Myrtle Beach and played Coastal on Thursday, Friday. They ended up moving the game from Saturday to Friday because of concerns about how bad the weather was going to be in the Carolinas this weekend and places. I mean, Myrtle Beach ended up getting, I think, upwards of 4 inches of snow by the time Sunday's over. And, Bill, that's not a place that usually finds itself.
They're not built for that.
Especially with, like, spring breakers coming in a couple of weeks, right, at Myrtle Beach. Like, they're not really thinking, like, a snowstorm's on the way. So, yeah, we were able to get both the games in, and Troy won both games. Came back from down 21 on Wednesday night to beat Marshall in a game where, it's not over because you have a lot of conference play left, but Troy
it's
and Marshall
close, though, isn't it?
Troy and Marshall were two teams where it's like, if you win, you can still win out and win the conference, and if you lose, you're going to need help even if you win out. And so it was a pretty important game near the top of the standings, and Troy got Marshall's best shot and beat him, came back and won that one, and then faced down Coastal on a quick turnaround on Friday. And that's a those two always play ever since I started doing this. Troy and Coastal played really close games, and doesn't matter, like, it really is like a throw the records out, and Coastal can be rebuilding and they still find a way to play Troy really tough, and so we're glad to go up there and get a win and come home. We got App State on Wednesday, but season's going well. Troy's they've risen to the occasion.
Is this the best start they've had since you've been doing it?
You know, they've had a couple of years where they're pretty deep into conference play. They had a better non-conference than they usually do because they usually have to go on the road and play some of those really tough teams, and they beat Missouri earlier this year. But this is they're used to being near the
top. What's the record right now?
They are up to 18-4.
Okay,
maybe 19-4. I forget what the I know they're. They're,
here's the play-by-play guy doesn't know what their record.
You know what it is?
I
focus on the conference record more now. Okay. Like we're so hyper focused on especially, and because teams have had bye weeks, it's really like it's the loss column. Mm-hmm. Like I can tell you exactly how many losses everyone in the conference has because that's what we're all watching right now. And Ark State's got one, Troy and Georgia Southern right behind them with two, and that feels like things are getting tight with a month left.
Yeah, so it's good to have Dan back. It's also good to have Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com back in the studio. B-Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Good to be here. You know, tough news we got, of course.
Friday afternoon. My goodness. I mean, that made it really tough. It was hard to finish the show Friday after I saw the news about Philip Marshall. I mean, we'd just seen Philip in the last week or two.
Yeah.
And he had just written something the day before.
Did you found out during the show?
Yes.
I'm
talking with Don and as a matter of fact, we had just started run Stephen Pearl audio, and I saw, and that gave me time to sort of check, and it's like, oh, and I just had to stop the audio and talk about that. I mean, you know, and apparently he passed in his sleep. Yep. I mean, that was one of the first things you wonder, you know, Philip lost over 100 pounds. He was so proud of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was by far the smallest I'd ever seen. Philip still sounded the same. I mean, still the same old Philip. But yeah, I mean, sad news. I mean, definitely an icon in this state among, you know, media. I mean, there is no question about that. And it is ridiculous that he's not in the Alabama Sports Writers Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous that he's not.
I don't understand that. I didn't understand it a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. He's one of the greatest sports writers in the history of the state. Covered Bear Bryant back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
When I wrote about this, but what is one of the things that's remarkable about him, there's a lot of things remarkable, but, you know, he went from being a great newspaper reporter.
Right.
Right? Taking notes on pads and, you know, doing all the things that they used to do. And then through this incredible changes we've been through in journalism and sports journalism.
Where you saw so many newspaper guys just sort of fade away.
You saw so many newspapers.
The guys that were with the newspaper, a lot of them just, that's it, you know, moving on. But not Philip.
He continued to be a star and be a leader in the market. And I attribute that to him, number one, his great writing ability, his storytelling ability, and his just great ability to make personal connections with anybody he comes in contact with, you know. But for him, coaches and athletic directors and everybody involved, you know, within a college athletic community and university.
The way his industry changed and the way, you know, Auburn and sports changed, you know, over the course of his career, and the fact that he was able to keep his finger on the pulse the entire time and stay incredibly well connected and well liked and well respected and well read, you know, I think speaks to what kind of person he was. And I got to know him through working with you, Bill. Like, you know, he was a weekly caller. You know, we had the visit with Philip.
Well, he had his own show, remember, for a little while.
So that's his own show, which I was that before my time.
I think it was in between your time because I remember, while you were gone.
Because I would say I remember we would be doing the show at Touchdowns, mm-hmm. and it was Tuesdays. We're at Touchdowns, and Philip's on in the first hour, and it was always, you know, one of the highlights of the week was getting to catch up with Philip and see what, you know, what was, and I know we had callers who occasionally compared it to Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes, because it would be a time for Philip to talk about what annoyed and angered him that week in the world of sports and around an Auburn game. And it was just, it was so much fun to get to hear him tell stories. I think something you've seen kind of universally in the tributes to him is people mentioning, like, he was one of the best storytellers. Like,
no question.
People who met him come away saying, like, oh yeah, who are the best storytellers you've ever met? And, like, no matter who else you've encountered in your life, it feels like Philip Marshall is on everyone's list among people who knew him. And I told the story on the Doug show earlier today that I remember. I mean, the last time I got to talk with him a lot was at the Golish introductory press conference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, among other things, you know, how many of these introductory press conferences we'd been to. And you, Bill, mentioned that you'd been to everyone since Pat Dye.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked Philip, and he said he'd been to all of them. That was his answer. We asked him how many introductory press conferences.
And you know that that may have been true, because I don't know that there were introductory press conferences before you know, before Doug Barfield. Yeah. I don't know that Shug had an introductory press conference.
Heisman. Yeah. You don't know if Heisman.
So I don't know. So I guarantee you he'd been to more than any.
Hearing him riff and tell stories was great. And I remember I kind of recently Philip, when we had, and I guess because we're going to try to talk to the coordinators
right
later this week. And when Auburn had availability with the assistant coaches, I guess it would have been last year, maybe 2 years ago, and Philip just wanted to talk to Ken Austin about the games Philip remembered because Philip had that incredible ability to recall details from games a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Too. You could mention, and Bill, you've got a lot of that too, but like that. I mean, even you, I think, would acknowledge, like, Philip had that.
It was remarkable. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so Philip could remind Ken Austin of times that Ken Austin had struggled as a player.
Ole Miss quarterback. It's like, yeah, my goodness. So, I mean, he definitely will be missed. I mean, just a sad news that broke there on Friday afternoon. I'm going to head up. Tomorrow, I would imagine what a crowd there will be tomorrow from media and sports figures, mm-hmm. I would think, that will be at Phillips' services tomorrow up in Decatur.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you know, he connected with a lot of people in his 50-plus years of professional life.
He had more and better sources.
Yeah.
I mean, he always knew somebody who knew.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no question about that. So tough. Yeah, that was tough on Friday. We've got the weekend of sports to talk about. Auburn basketball dropping a game in Knoxville where the Tigers never led. And from about the 30-second mark when Tennessee hit a three, that was it. Tennessee never trailed. But Auburn, after falling behind by as many as 16, was able to cut it to three on multiple occasions, but never could get it closer than that.
And I thought it was a pretty competitive game. And I think Pearl nailed it afterwards. He said Tennessee did to Auburn what Auburn's been doing.
They out-Auburned at Auburn's game.
And Auburn took too many three-pointers and, again, didn't shoot well from beyond the arc. So that's going to happen. Most teams go to Knoxville and lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is nothing new. Auburn, I think, was 9-51 or something like that going in that game. So, you know, this is just part of basketball. But I think if you look at the first half of Auburn's schedule, I think there's a lot to be proud of. They could easily be 7-2. Mm-hmm. They've clearly gotten better. They found their identity, and I think the next half of the schedule sets up better for them. They got
an extra home game.
Yep, mm-hmm. And I think they probably feel a lot better about themselves. And I think this week off comes at a perfect time too. They needed the rest, but they've also got Alabama right there in front of them. So that's going to keep them pretty focused on that.
Yeah, rough day yesterday for the Tide as Florida. Florida, you know, Stephen Pearl talked about Tennessee. He said Tennessee punked Auburn. Florida punked Alabama.
They did.
I mean, they just 72 points in the paint.
Yeah, we asked Philip how many Auburn press conferences he'd been to, and he said all of them. It's like, how many points in the paint did Florida have yesterday?
Felt like all of them.
All of them. Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. I mean, 72, and it was just – I mean, look, so for Auburn, you know, I think Auburn had found something of an identity these last couple of games, mm-hmm. and it was based around, and it wasn't the identity we thought they were going to have at the beginning of the season, right? Like
not at all.
You didn't think this team was going to be a slow it down and really play tough defense for 30 seconds and try to out physical teams and try to win the rebounding battle. Like, this sounds like last year's team when you're describing like what this team wants to do, and this year's team, you thought because they had some pieces that really looked like they skewed towards offense. You know, especially some of those freshman and sophomore guards you're not seeing right now. Like, you know, guys that you thought were coming in as big-time offensive pieces. Like, you thought things could be a little bit different. But over these last few games, Auburn won against South Carolina and Ole Miss and Florida and Texas by being the more physical team.
Yes,
and
I mean, not obviously. I mean, they didn't shoot the ball extremely well in most of those games.
And they were able to hold their own in categories like rebounding and points in the paint, and even in some cases, you know, have big advantages in those numbers. Tennessee was the more physical team on Saturday. Like, yeah. Tennessee won those battles that Auburn had been winning lately. And if you're Auburn and you can't win the game that way on the road against a good team, I think you're unless things change from an offensive execution standpoint, you're probably not going to win too many of those games where you, especially if you're on the road and you get out physicaled and you don't win in the paint, like then you have to hit your jump shots.
Yes,
to have a chance,
which they haven't done for the most part. I mean, they did have the one game against Texas where they shot it well, but that's really been the only game lately that Auburn has shot it well.
And jump shooting is fickle, right? I mean, that's something that can heat up, but you totally understand why
you can't expect to rely on that.
You can understand why a team that has the physical ability, kind of like what Auburn did to Florida, if you have the players to force Auburn to play outside the paint. Like, if you can pack the paint and sort of dare
Auburn.
Which
Florida could do, but they couldn't do it on that day against Auburn. For sure.
Yeah. And so if you can do that to Auburn, it's probably the smartest way to force Auburn to beat you right now offensively,
yes.
is to force Auburn shooters to get hot and convert that way. That's what Tennessee did, and Auburn didn't have enough from the outside.
Back to Alabama-Florida, though. I'm sure Florida was already – upset about the way things went with Auburn, right? And they were probably fired up coming against Alabama. And then Nate Oates says something about when you sit in the lane for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seconds, it helps you offensively. I'm sure that really, really fired
them up.
Well,
I mean, they both had a lot of fun because Todd Golden, and obviously, you know, when he was first asked about Bediako, he said, it doesn't matter, we're going to beat him anyway. So, I mean, he'd sort of started. Both of those coaches don't mind. They don't mind, you know, tossing barbs.
Yeah.
But that's the one Oates had said. And I thought there were a couple of great responses on social media.
What a week.
That, you know, Florida just found a local judge that allowed him to stay in the lane.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
What a week for Florida since losing to Auburn, too.
Yeah, I mean,
They beat South Carolina by a million and then follow it up by trouncing Alabama. And they're
still looking up at Texas A&M.
They're still looking up at A&M, who keeps winning despite the voters not putting them in the top 25.
Right.
You
know,
which is
if they keep winning, they will be. But their schedule is much tougher in the second half. You were talking, Brian, about how the second half is favorable for Auburn. Texas A&M will get the opportunity to prove they deserve to be there at the top of the league because their schedule they've played most of the bottom teams of the league here in the first half.
I'll be honest with you. I kind of want them to have a little bit of a comeuppance. So we'll see how that goes. I would love for Auburn to get a shot at them in the SEC.
Well, there are a lot of people who feel that way about
it.
You know what, though? I am. It's hard not to be impressed with what he's been able to do in year one at Texas A&M.
That system works, and he wins.
Yeah. And it's
everywhere.
And it seems like he'll tell you about it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and
he will.
And it seems like a system, too, where – and, I mean, we'll see how far it could take you, like, in the postseason would be the next question. Mm-hmm. But it's a system that does seem like you can find players in the portal that fit what you're trying to do, which is another challenge you have to navigate in college basketball these days. You know, finding guys that buy into wanting to run and press and can shoot threes and can make them, because I think a lot of guys
anybody can shoot a three.
Yeah, it's. As you know, shot taking and shot making are different skills. So, finding guys that can, because that was the thing that struck me about that A&M Auburn game was when they get hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they scored 40 points in 10 minutes.
Yes,
like they can get, you know, when they get hot, they can get as hot as anybody in the country. I want to see what happens with the. I mean, that look, Texas A&M Alabama. Feels like a battle of two teams that want to score. You know, it's a race to 125 potentially. So let's see what let's see what that looks like.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday edition.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening
to Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. And let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and TP is up first. What's up, TP?
Hey, guys, I got a legal question. If I'm listening to the drive and I'm talking to the drive and I'm driving, am I violating any traffic laws?
Ooh. Yeah, I think as long as you're on a hands-free.
Hands-free, I think, would probably be the key there.
You're not supposed to have a hand on the phone while you're driving. But
too bad we're not on YouTube, and you can just hold the YouTube up and talk to us that way while you're driving.
Okay, great.
I do not recommend that.
Safety first.
I've been an Auburn fan for 50 years. I love Auburn basketball. During the Tony Barbie era, that year, I think I saw Auburn lose more football and basketball games than anybody. So I think I have the record for that. But here's my question for this week. Last week, Auburn handled Florida in Gainesville, and it was a very masterful game. It was a beautiful game to watch. And then yesterday, I watched Bama and Florida in the same venue, and Florida demolished Bama. So my question is, what did Auburn do that was so dominating with Florida and then with Bama coming in, and basically it was a rout, and also leading into this week's game with Bama at Neville Arena?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is Auburn caught Florida off guard a little bit. I don't think they're expecting Auburn to come in there and play that physical and hit in the mouth. Florida was playing really well at the time. People were talking about they were the best team in the SEC.
Yeah.
They were really coming on.
I think Auburn caught Florida at a great time.
So, I mean, I think that happens sometimes. And, you know, I think when a team loses like Florida did against Auburn at home, that can be a turning point in their season, and they come out and become a much better team after that. And I think that's what's happening with them. But I don't want to take away from what Auburn did either. I thought that was a great win by them, a great game plan by Stephen Pearl, and just a terrific effort by Auburn, not just to build that lead, but when Florida made that run, for them not to just fall to pieces, for them to keep grinding and finding a way to pull away there at the end.
Yeah, it seemed like after some initial friction, you know, initial resistance, Florida was willing to shoot some jumpers with their front court, like Florida's bigs were willing to try to shoot from outside rather than bang with Auburn, and that proved to be to Auburn's advantage. Tennessee's bigs were not going to stand on the outside and shoot jumpers. You can try it all night. Those dudes are going to bite down on the mouthpiece, and they're going to go right to the basket, you know, no matter what. And for Tennessee to do that without Akpara, I thought was really impressive. Like they're going to be one of the tougher outs, I think. Even though guard play matters a lot and they need their guards to hit shots, their front court is a tough matchup for just about anybody in college basketball, and they showed it to you on Saturday night. And I think Auburn had been out physicaling teams, including Florida, around the basket, and they just weren't able to do it against Tennessee.
How do you think that's going to tie into Auburn getting this Saturday with Bama? Is Bama going to be all bowed up and playing a different game, or is it just a matter of them hitting their threes and if we can contain them?
Hey, they've got Texas A&M midweek before they come to Auburn, so they've got another thing. They sure can't be thinking about Auburn right now. But, no, I mean, I think it is. It's going to be very important how well Auburn plays and defends the Alabama three, because they're not going to change. Alabama's not going to change their game.
There's two strikes against Alabama already in that they have a midweek game and Auburn doesn't, and the game on Saturday is in Auburn, right? So you'd think those are two things that both skew advantage Auburn, and for Alabama to overcome both of those things and come to Auburn and win, it would be a very impressive win for Nate Oates and company. And I think for Auburn, it would feel like a missed opportunity because
huge missed opportunity.
You've got this week to get ready for that game, and you feel like your front court could maybe have some success down low against Alabama.
Going to be interesting too. The Bediako hearing is Friday, the day before the before the game.
Wow, I didn't realize it. I thought it was a little bit earlier. I didn't realize it was Friday. Wow.
And he has not necessarily made a gigantic difference.
No, I mean he's had a couple of pretty good offensive games.
They're probably better. Yeah,
but they're 1-2 with him.
Hey, can I make one more comment?
Sure.
All right, Tahad, Everybody's got their opinion, and I'm going to give them the right to it. But almost everywhere I go, there's just bad mouthing of Tahat. And to me, him coming back, and I don't think there's any player, if he's just got one-on-one and he's going to the basket, mm-hmm. I don't know anybody that can handle him if it's just one-on-one. But the other thing is, it looks like he is adjusting his game, going, okay, I'm the point guard. Let me get the other guy's points. Let me threaten with this move to the key. Threaten. If he starts hitting threes, the whole thing is incredibly exciting. But he may not and still be the best player on the court.
Yeah, I think he's got to – that's a good point. You know, with Tahat, he's got to find that balance of when he needs to look for his own shot and when he needs to get his teammates involved and create, and when he looks for his own shot, how much of it should be based around the pull-up or the jump shot versus trying to initiate contact and finish at the rim.
But you know, I agree with
– it's easier said than done.
One of the things Steven said, though, when he gets – wide open looks the way he had a couple the other night.
Yeah.
I mean, he had one when Auburn was down three. And it's like, it looked really good, and they just seem to be rattling around and coming out. You know, they're just not going down. And you don't want him to never shoot. And I do agree with TP. I don't think he's forcing that many shots. He's just, you know, he's just in a slump. There's no question about it. But sometimes slumps last a long time.
You want him to stay confident in his ability to do everything in the offense. And I think the concern would be that if the jump shot slumps, he can – because I thought both against Tennessee and especially against Missouri, there were times when he was making poor decisions trying to get that jump shot going again and you know, shooting too quickly and shooting – in situations where he was contested, wasn't as much of a problem against Tennessee. You know, the problem against Tennessee was the good looks weren't going in. Mm-hmm. But I think that's got to be for a point guard trying to get his own offense going, and a guy who has to play pretty much 40 minutes for Auburn right now too.
He's like 36 is a light night, seems like, now for him.
And the Michalik minutes have not gone well the last couple of games either. Like, it feels like the closer you can get Todd to 40 right now, the better off you'll be.
Well, I mean, or can Kevin Overton run the point a little bit?
Yeah, and you know what? And that's something. I feel like you're. And we appreciate the phone call, TP. Great stuff. But like the injury to Overton, the hitting his head on the on the guy's knee.
Yeah.
I think between that and Keyshawn Hall, you're glad you don't have a midweek game.
Yeah, no kidding.
Right? Like, I mean, if this team
Keyshawn Hall did, I mean, that finger was bothering him the whole game.
If they had a game Tuesday night, that would be a really tall order for this team to try to figure out. And so, I think that's got to be, you know, how Tahat navigates this and stays confident and stays, willing to keep playing team ball. It's huge.
Yep, appreciate the call, TP. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue. I want to remind you, let you know, we're off a little early today because of Auburn women's basketball in Birmingham at Legacy Arena because Oxford still shut down. University of, Ole Miss is closed through this week.
Wow.
So Auburn-Ole Miss basketball coming up tonight right here on ESPN 106.7. As we'll go till around 5:40 or so. So plenty of time for you to get in.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And right back to the phones we go, and Jeff is up next. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, guys. How you doing this day?
Pretty good.
Good.
Good. That game Saturday night, so frustrating because that game was there to be had. Tennessee was had in the second half. They just beat us on hustle plays, and that's what's so frustrating, that we're just getting beat to these 50-50 balls. And those are the things that Coach BP always said, the 50-50 balls of what win or lose the games.
Yeah, I agree. And that's where you wonder, you wonder a little bit about just being able to play only seven players. You know, hopefully you get your legs back a little bit this week, but there's still a lot of basketball to be played, and that's something that is a concern for me as you head into March.
And the longer the guys who aren't in the rotation go without being in the rotation, you know, if you're talking about a Magwood or a Simon Walker or an Addy or a Bashir.
I agree.
The longer they go, the harder it is they imagine they're going to slide right back in, and it's going to be fine, especially if – I mean, in the case of Magwood and Walker, like, they're healthy and not getting minutes right now because of their defense is the way that we sort of understand it right now. And so,
that's what's going on with Magwood. I was going to ask why is he in the doghouse, so to speak?
I wouldn't call it doghouse. I just think they want him to play better defense. He asked to go on the scout team and work on it there. So that's what he's been doing the last couple of weeks, I guess. Now, you know, we haven't got it really update here in the last week or so.
When he started losing minutes earlier, it felt like Steven talked about it being disciplinary and talked about, you know, his team having a problem with lateness.
And guys
in the rotation were going to lose rotational spots or lose runs in the rotation because of it.
Yeah.
Lately, it felt like it's been more about his defense than any sort of disciplinary problem. And that's, I would imagine, especially with the three-point shooting the way it is, Bill, you would imagine that's also the case with Simon Walker, that they feel like they probably can't trust Walker on extended defensive runs.
Which is interesting because back in the preseason, Steven really talked about liking what he saw from Simon Walker defensively. And then he got hurt. And I don't know if he's, you know.
Steven complimented Simon's defensive play against A&M. And then I think it didn't go well in a couple subsequent games, and he's since
disappeared.
Yeah. Maybe this week off, though, can provide an opportunity for one of those guys. We'll see.
I hope so. Well, I think part of the problem, Tahad, is exhausted. Those minutes are really – you can see from the early part of the game to the latter parts of the game, and listening early on another radio show, they made a great point where Tahad is better fitted for this Auburn team when he's attacking. Because he's ambidextrous, he's just as good with that left hand. The right hand is good with the left hand. I think if he go to the basket, it's almost like he's conceded to settle for jumpers, and I think that's hurting the operation of this offense right now. You know, I believe he'd be more effective if he just take that ball and drive to the basket. I don't believe anyone can stop him one-on-one. That's just from what I see.
Well, you think about it too. I mean, his minutes went up in the latter part of February and the SEC tournament, but Auburn spent most of SEC play last year playing Tahad 20 to 25 minutes a game and being able to deploy him that way. And it's going to be closer, unless something changes with the rotation, it's going to be closer to 40 than it is to 30 the rest of this season. And you're right. They got to find, that may limit his ability to be as aggressive an attacking offensive guard as he was last year when they used him more sparingly.
Well, I think that's going to be the whole key, and somehow we've got to find a way to limit these teams on the odd. Wow, Tennessee's not even, God bless them, they're well coached, but that was so frustrating just see them get those effort plays. And one thing about it, you can't get out effort. You know, you can get out beat, out athletic, but you can't get out effort. That's where Tennessee wins this game at. So I hope Stephen Coach SP works on that this week. Effort.
I'm sure they will. So many of the numbers were very disappointing. To be out rebounded by 16, just something I knew, and Stephen had harped on it. I mean, they're the best offensive rebounding team in the league, and And I believe they were number two in the nation in offensive rebounds going into the ball game, and sure didn't do anything to hurt themselves there.
No, and it was the first time in a couple of games where Auburn got pushed around a little bit. Like Auburn had been, you know, that was something Auburn had been able to do to other teams.
But, I mean, you know, we talked about, well, we saw it, you know, Ole Miss had won three straight when Auburn went in there, and Ole Miss started feeling pretty good about themselves. Auburn went in there and beat them.
Yep.
Florida was feeling pretty good about themselves when Auburn went in there and beat them.
That's right.
And then, you know, it's hard for young kids not to think, okay, we got this now.
And it's also,
you've gone on the road and beaten Florida. I mean, you feel like you're going to be able to.
It's also hard when you're at the end of a, you know, a several-week streak of playing two games a week where your identity is you have to have more energy, have more hustle, play more physical than the other team. That's how you win, to do that night in and night out. Eventually, you're going to hit a wall at some point. And I thought in some ways that's what happened for Auburn at Tennessee.
Yeah.
And Tennessee is deeper and can throw more of those bodies at you, especially at guard. And they've got – I mean, one of the reasons that Saturday feels like a bit of a missed opportunity is because, I mean, it wasn't as though Tennessee played great either in that game. I mean, when Auburn was down 16, it was really concerning because you felt like Tennessee was just starting to heat up too. Like, even though they'd grown the lead to 16, it was like, oh, this could get really bad if things don't change. And credit to Auburn, they chipped away. And in the second half, Auburn had the ball down three with, you know,
it was three or four times.
Yeah.
I mean, but
if I'd shown you Ament's numbers before the game, if I'd said, hey, Auburn holds him to, what, 4 of 16 shooting? Like, you'd have been like, oh, Auburn's got a chance in this one. So it's like there were some things Auburn did well, but they just didn't. I mean, it's like they played, I said on the Observer podcast, like, against Florida, Auburn played hard and they played well. And against Tennessee, they played hard.
Hard. Yeah,
and it's right. And if you're going to win on the road against good teams in the SEC, you know, I know Jeff just made the point, effort. It's sometimes about more than just effort, right? And I thought against Tennessee,
I didn't think there was a lack of effort.
No.
By Auburn. But I mean, you know, and look, Tennessee's playing at home, and they had a tremendous week going on the road and beating Alabama and Georgia on the road.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I mean, it's tough.
These next three feel big for Auburn.
Right.
I was talking about it with Doug. Like the thought of like, you got Auburn at you got Alabama at home, you got Vandy at home, you go to Arkansas.
Yeah.
And I would say that if you don't win at least one of them, you've put your tournament position in some peril. Like if you were to drop all three of these, then suddenly you've played your way to the bubble and you've let, you know, really any chance of contending for the league title, you know, whatever hopes there are of that, like those would be extinguished with losses in these next three. The more of these that you win, the better you can feel about, like if Auburn were to go 3-0 in their next three, they could play their way off the bubble in a good way. Like wins over Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas. Ooh. With Auburn's current resume, moves Auburn into, I mean, look, they probably can't collapse down the stretch, but like you're a tournament lock halfway through February if you win these next three. Like, I mean, that's where, I mean, with wins over St. John's and NC State in the non-conference, and that'd be seven SEC wins with several games left in, you know, with
six. If you won all three, it'd be eight.
Yeah, if you won all three, you'd have eight SEC wins with you know, several opportunities to get to nine ten.
With seven games to play.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so if you win these next three, like you're in excellent shape. You lose these next three, you've probably got work to do to put yourself back in definite. I mean, you could be on the bubble. You could be on the wrong side of the bubble. Like these next three games are really big, and that's, you know, that's probably another reason why. So now you've got Auburn's got a bye week, Alabama doesn't. Auburn's at home, and it's the beginning of a very important three game stretch for Auburn that maybe has outsized importance in deciding what the tournament resume looks like.
Yeah, that pretty much says it right there. All right, we'll get to our.
You better show up on Saturday, or else.
Yeah.
Or else
this is pretty close to a must win. I mean, because you feel like you should. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Again, we're on for about another 50 minutes or so here this afternoon before we turn things over for Auburn women's basketball against Ole Miss.
Do we have time?
Oh, we always have time.
Do we have time? I'll tell you, no, because we're gonna talk to the football coaches. We can talk about that a little bit. You know, sort of what Brian's interested to talk about with Coach Golish and both coordinators.
I want to hear Joel Gordon's.
Yeah,
you know, I'm looking forward to meeting the other assistant coaches.
And I'm also curious to get a little baseball chatter in with Brian with
top five preseason Auburn Tigers.
And maybe a Super Bowl prediction too. So we got a lot to talk about with Brian Matthews between now and the end of the show.
Yeah, so stick with us.
Derek Hall's Seattle Seahawks.
Monday Musings.
Yep. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 90 toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian. All right, we were just talking a little baseball here. Might as well do that. We've got 3 or 4 minutes here, Brian. I mean, yes. you watched a good bit of the preseason workouts here. This is a deep, deep Auburn team. I think Butch's deepest team.
Oh, especially position player-wise, you know. And I think they've got a ton of arms. They just got to figure out, you know, what's
the role going to
be. Right, mm-hmm. right. And see if some of those guys can develop into number one type starters. We don't know that yet, but I think the potential is there for them. But I think the lineup is just super exciting. You know, you got a bunch of those freshmen that were so good last year, Rembert, Bub, Chase Frelick are all back, and they've looked – just terrific out there. Eric Guevara is back, looking healthy out there. May play some shortstop this year, along with being able to play third base. I really like a lot of their additions. Todd Clay, especially, is just a big, powerful right-handed bat who works his tail off. You know, he's a local kid returning to Auburn, so excited
fabulous
to have him
fall.
In there.
Yep.
yep. And Lucas Steele is just a switch hitter who has just tremendous leadership skills and is a really talented, you know, hitter too, and baseball player, and is a guy you just want the lineup because, he can really rally his teammates. I just think he's one of those guys that people love to play with and are going to love to support. And, the outfield's got tons of speed. You know, they got to figure out first base, third base, and some things. But I just think the lineup, you know, were times Auburn was maybe 6 or 7, maybe missing another couple really good bats. Now, to me, it looks like 11 or 12 guys that could easily be starters, easily, maybe more. So, the competition's still going on there, and we'll see what happens with the pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, that's you're right. That's the key right now. And I feel like early on you're going to probably see a lot of guys get out there and see how they perform, in front of, all the eyes.
That's right, because, they're competing right now for those spots, but, if somebody goes out there, is in a slump or get injured, they've got guys who are ready to step in and be next guy up and be really protective players right away. So I would expect the competition to continue throughout the season, and I'm excited to see maybe an Ethan Bingaman or, one of the McCrane brothers.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Brandon or what's the other one? Mason, I think.
Yes, Mason.
Mason's the younger one, the bigger, taller guy who pitches and hits. I mean, they have immense talent, so it could be that one of those guys breaks through as a starter, either as a pitcher or as a hitter. Bingaman's also a two-way player.
We are. It's next Friday. Next Friday, so we're 11 days away.
Youngstown State coming to town for a 3-game series, and then we're off and running.
Yep, so it's getting – hopefully, hopefully the weather's more like today than it was. I'd actually like to have it another 15 degrees warmer.
Yeah.
But, generally, opening the season, it's usually pretty chilly.
I'll tell you what, though, after some of the weather that we've encountered these last couple of days.
Oh, it felt balmy.
Yesterday when the sun was out and today, I mean, it felt like barbecue weather.
Yeah. You know,
it felt like,
although, I was going to ask Coach Phil, saw a shadow.
You know what, though?
Are you going to say something mean about Phil?
Doesn't know a thing. Doesn't
of course
know
he doesn't know a thing.
Doesn't know
He's
a
groundhog.
Doesn't know a
I
thing.
Mean, what do you think he knows? Yeah. All right. We're more than halfway done because we have an abbreviated hour number two, which we will we'll talk some football. We'll get Brian's Monday musings. Love to hear from you as well in hour number two of the Monday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody, made it through the weekend with everything still working.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. That sounded funny when I said that. I mean, hope the heat and the whatever. The
vital organs.
Everything. Yeah, yeah, really. I mean, I do hope everybody made it through with everything working. Welcome into the Monday Drive.
You know, that goes for every weekend.
It's a Monday.
Right?
That's true.
That
goes for every day.
It goes for every single day.
Yeah. It's Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday Drive. And
Philip would have gotten a kick out of that intro, out of that way to start the show.
He would have criticized me unendingly, incessantly on that. That's one thing Philip would let you know if you did something that was wrong. He would let you know.
Ferg told the story. I'd forgotten about this until he mentioned it on the Observer podcast too, of the way Philip used to tease Goldberg about not winning the championship in Goldberg's long-running fantasy league.
Oh yeah,
and he'd do the voice where he'd pretend to be a disgruntled season ticket holder, angry with Charles Goldberg. When are we gonna win a title, Charles? When are we gonna finally win one?
You know, Brian. I just think of Philip and JG.
Oh yeah,
with,
back
with
and forth.
Coming in
with the cats.
I'm gonna
automatic every time. Yep.
Yeah. Oh man. Again, that was sad news on Friday, but celebration of Philip tomorrow up in Decatur, and I'm sure it'll be a very very interesting group of folks that are there to celebrate.
I'm sure.
Let's get into hour number two. We're wide open, whatever's on your mind, and we'll get things started with the Philly Fanatic.
Hey, in a way, I'm glad Auburn's Tennessee was game on Saturday night was home. I was looking at it. It was wind chills in the 20s. It'd been a rough one to get to that one.
You know, it's the first game in like 4 years that Ferguson skipped because of weather. Ferguson didn't make the trip up to Knoxville. He had a Cal Ripken-esque streak of going to Auburn games in person, and he decided because of the weather Saturday morning that he was not going to try to get up to Knoxville and back.
My daughter-in-law made it up to the Carolinas and back. She's a wedding photographer and made it up there on left early on Friday though and didn't come back until Sunday. I mean, it was but still, I said, "Do you have any trouble?" She goes, "Well, I drove 15 down the mountain."
Philly, I told it at the top of the show, but Troy was supposed to play Coastal Carolina in Myrtle Beach on Saturday, and I think out of concern for what Myrtle Beach and the greater Carolina area would be like, Not just for the game, but also for Troy trying to drive home from there, you know, through the Carolinas and Atlanta, and we ended up driving home on, like, they moved the game to Friday, and we made it through Friday. I mean, it was cold, but aside from it being cold, it was really, you know, nothing all that different. But then looking at what happened Saturday in Myrtle Beach, I'm glad they moved the game because they don't treat the roads for snow in parts of coastal South Carolina.
I wanted to get into everyone being fussing about G League. If there doesn't seem to be any limit on international players, why the heck do you need a G League? I'm looking at Texas scorecard that, you know, that game I went to. They got 6'8" from Munich, Germany, 7' from Lithuania, 7' from London, and 6'9 from Ivory Coast. I mean, really, all they need is a couple guards and forwards on that team from someplace. I mean, they're all over the globe. They could end up with an Olympic team.
So I think that, and this was something that the NCAA wrestled with for years, was how to deal with players from around the world that played in a more professional structure, but seemingly still were of college age and right. wanted to get college degrees and pursue college basketball. And for a long time, the NCAA had the hard line of you forfeited your eligibility by playing any professional ball, even in your home country. And then that turned.
But they
into,
don't have other options. That was the big argument.
And then their stance sort of softened to, all right, well, you know, maybe it's you have a reduced eligibility or you forfeit a couple of years depending on how long you played professionally, and it's evolved into the red line, and the NCAA still considers the red line to be, despite Charles Bediako, the red line is if you've ever been under contract with an NBA team, you have forfeited your eligibility as a college basketball player. That is their stance. That's the stance they're going
For
to
now.
Argue. That's the stance
right.
they're going to argue in court on
we'll
Friday.
See, we'll see if it works or not.
Right. I mean, but until...
Well, probably not in Tuscaloosa, Brian. I doubt it's going to work in Tuscaloosa.
Until a judge tells them or a court of law tells them that can't be their stance anymore. But like they're saying that's their red line. And that's sort of what separates Bediako from a lot of the players that have... That have had questionable eligibility but have returned to college basketball, including the guy from Baylor who mm-hmm. was a draft pick. The thinking that those players were never under contract to an NBA team and thus professional basketball players in the United States in a way that Charles Bediako, as someone who signed a two-way deal, multiple two-way deals,
three of them,
he would be considered a professional under those rules. And if that. You know, if Charles Bediako turns out to be a trailblazer, who is not a Portland trailblazer, but like a...
he'd love to be a trailblazer.
If Portland called him, he'd be a trailblazer tomorrow. But if he turns out to be a trailblazer for college basketball, I mean, not to like Chicken Little it, but like, yeah, who knows how many players would say they want to be able to return to if...
And not just basketball.
If a contract with an NBA team is no longer the red line that it's been for a long time in the NCAA.
But that doesn't have anything to say with the international players. I mean, these teams could come out with the starting five all from
sure.
Someplace.
And we've seen some schools that have.
Well, I don't know. Well, then you got Florida with the 7'9" guy. He's Ripley's, believe it or not, tallest mm-hmm. player.
Well, I mean, Auburn's got a guy in Filip Jovic that I think in previous eras of college basketball, his eligibility would have been in question
right.
because of the professional development he received before coming to the United States of America. But I think that now they've sort of realized like their position has evolved to someone like that who is of the you know, he's going to be playing with players his age in America. There's a question of you know, like Bill said, his options and what he was able to do as a, you know, like when in countries where players turn professionally as young teenagers, should they be forfeiting their college basketball eligibility forever by making those decisions? Or should there be a middle ground somewhere where players like that, which is different than a guy playing a couple of years of college basketball and then deciding he's going to go to the NBA and then returning to college basketball.
Okay, well, I guess we're not going to solve this over the radio. But anyway, Brian, I have news today.
Yep.
And it's R.E.M. from Athens, Georgia.
Yes.
Hall of Fame. Songs like Losing My Religion,
oh,
Everybody
yes.
Hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Orange Crush, Follow Me,
yep.
Man on the Moon, Super Duper.
That's
they
right.
They had some good groups come out of Athens. Yeah, I mean, B-52s.
Right,
that's right. And definitely music I listened to in college, definitely college music all the way. So, yes, absolutely.
All right. War Eagle.
Good hearing from you.
R.E.M.'s great.
Yeah, Philly fanatic.
Hey, I would say one of the bands you can hear pretty frequently on Wings 94.3. Between Everybody Hurts, Losing My Religion, Man on the Moon. Yeah, great stuff.
Yep, Michael Stipe and company. Yes. Well, you want to use that as a little lead into
sure.
to Monday Musings? Might as
sure.
well get into that.
And I just wrote about what I think is the terrific job Stephen Pearl and his staff are doing building this team, you know, taking 10, you know, players from different schools and different levels of basketball and blending them all into a team and how much they've improved over the course of the season. So got him credit for that. And then I wrote a little bit about Phillip, which we talked about in the opening, just about how he was such a star over this entire, you know, from newspapers all the way into the digital age, and still thrived in both, you know, eras of sports media, which to me is incredible. And in our musical journey, and you're going to get this fast, Bill, so we might want to give Dan a chance first. But we're
starting. Dan's usually pretty quick.
No, I want to hear this. Yeah,
we're starting out with a roar, and we're going back 53 years. So that's 1973
in a roar.
To the debut of a late night musical variety TV show that was first hosted by Helen Reddy. I'm not going to say the rest of it because that'll really give it away.
Late night musical variety show.
There were two.
It's not Saturday Night Live because
No. There were two.
Is this? I mean, and this is before. Like, I mean, these aren't like Laugh-In and.
No.
Musical variety.
I'm thinking.
Shows.
All right,
Helen Reddy.
You want Dan?
Starts with a roar.
No, I mean, either of y'all. Yeah, I want it to be a little easier.
I mean, there was Don Kirshner's show
in concert,
yep. And then there was Midnight Special.
Yep.
Midnight Special lasted.
Yes.
For a while.
Did Helen Reddy host Midnight Special?
It's the first one, yes.
I did not recall Helen Reddy.
I think it was the first few or so, yes.
I didn't realize
now
that.
Does Midnight Special, is that what SNL replaces? Is that right?
They wanted to fill that time slot on Friday night.
Okay.
For the first time after the Tonight Show.
Yeah, it was Friday. That was Friday.
Okay, yeah. Yep.
And that was another show.
Letterman or with Kramer and Larry David.
Yeah, sure was.
Because Carson didn't do a show on Friday. Carson, they would run like reruns or best ofs.
I don't know. Back then, that was the case, but they wanted something to follow.
They wanted something after it.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And they also
at 11:30.
They also wanted something that would have live music to appeal to the 18 to 35-year-old
crowd.
They had
some acts.
Oh, incredible number of acts they had there. And one thing I think that made this show great was almost all the acts were live, no pre-recorded, no lip syncing, which, you know, you're getting that group right there seeing them.
Whose idea was
person.
It?
It was,
I don't know.
I wrote it. I should be able to know that. Bert Sugarman.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah, okay.
He pitched it in NBC as an alternative to the concert on ABC.
Uh-huh.
And NBC turned him down. So he got Chevrolet as a sponsor and bought his own airtime and held a special.
Wow.
And then after NBC saw the ratings and that, they went ahead and bought it and put it as
it
a weekly series. 8 years.
I didn't realize it was that long.
Yep. I think it was around 350 episodes.
Total. Midnight Special is one of those shows. And another one that comes to mind is like the Playboy Club. Where I would say it's something that I've heard about through reputation, but I've never actually seen. But a lot of like musical acts I know about, and a lot of people I've heard of.
The line it was true. Was it Johnny Rivers' Midnight Special that they used?
Yeah, that was his version they used as the theme song.
The Schlitz Playhouse of Stars.
CCRs is much better.
Everybody from the 70s and early 80s appeared on it. Country, soul, R&B.
That's sort of the way music was back in the 70s. It was much more eclectic. There was not, you didn't have the separate, even though you had separate charts, it all played on like top 40, which is sort of what this was aimed at.
It's like a rock and roll Grand Ole Opry.
But,
almost, right?
But
like,
some of the more memorable ones I picked out, Hocus Pocus by Focus.
By Focus.
Which is yodeling and whistling.
Brian, why would you pick that up? That is one of the weirdest.
I know that's it was the most unique thing you ever see. But they performed live on that, and it's wild to go watch it. Yep.
Yeah.
Steve Miller, The Joker, Dave Bowie's Space Oddity, Joe Walsh's Rocky Mountain Way was incredible. And then, if you go watch Heart, which song was Crazy on You, and watch Nancy Wilson play the acoustic guitar on that song on it's incredible, just unbelievable how good she is. So those were some Journey. I had a couple of appearances. I thought their Wheel in the Sky was incredible. Of course, Fleetwood Mac, my favorite. A bunch of those songs were on there, but I picked out
Rihanna.
Yes.
I knew you'd pick Rihanna. I just don't want to. I can just see Stevie twirling. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. This is early. This is like right after. This is before Rihanna became a hit, I think.
Oh, wow.
She performed that, so it was really good. Bee Gees and Wilson Pickett did Hey Jude together.
Oh, yeah?
Which I thought was really good. Rod
Wicked
Stewart.
Wilson Pickett and the Bee Gees. Yep. That's a good one.
Rod
like
Stewart
that.
And Keith Richard doing Twisting the Night Away, another like collaboration
well,
you wouldn't expect.
One.
So
yeah.
The cool thing is Midnight Special has gone back on YouTube and put most of the shows
oh, yeah?
that are
oh,
available.
Cool.
So Google an artist, Google Midnight Special, and if they're from the 70s, early 80s, they're going to pop up most likely.
Oh, that's cool. Great stuff, Monday Musings. Yeah, it's one of the things that we look forward to Brian talking about. All right, we have a shortened hour number two because of Auburn women's basketball.
We should mention before we take the break, unless you want to talk about it in the next segment, Gus Malzahn.
Yes, yes. I thought we would talk about we'll talk about Gus is leaving the game, at least as leaving coaching.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that and more when we come back. Love for you to join in the final 20 minutes or so of the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. At The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 520 on this Monday. And again, Auburn women's basketball coming up. The Tigers are sort of at Ole Miss. They're in Birmingham at Legacy Arena. The game, I mean, they're on the road playing Ole Miss, but Ole Miss is already 1-0 at Legacy. They played really well there the other night. So anyway, we'll be turning things over in about 15, 20 minutes.
Awesome.
In the meantime, as we were going to the last break, yes, definitely need to talk a little bit about Gus Malzahn deciding to retire from coaching after 35 years in the biz.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'll remember Gus Malzahn as one of the best coaches I've covered on the field, but definitely my favorite coach
just
off the field as a person.
Really, really good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about that with
Gus. 100%, yes. Just a great person. And his wife, Christy, also incredible. They made a great team together there. And, I hope they have just the best retirement ever with their grandkids and everything. But, you got to go back to 2010 or 9, but him going to get Cam Newton, him building an offense that Cam Newton could do what Cam Newton did in it, and just being the architect of that national championship was such a big moment in Auburn history, right? And then,
oh, no doubt,
to come back in 2013 and turn that really, really bad, 2012 season right around.
Terrible 2012 season, and have Nick Marshall, come in and just be phenomenal. A wizard with the ball.
Yeah,
I mean,
12 to 13.
Those wins over Georgia and Alabama in 13 were incredible, of course.
12 to 13 is one of the most remarkable single season turnarounds in the history of the sport.
Well,
like,
10
not just
to 12 to 13 is just incredible.
Sure.
I mean, just the high, the lowest of the low, and then
well,
back
and
almost
and
all
you're
the way
winless
on top
in conference in 08.
Yep.
Right? So think about it. You go from winless in conference in 08 to the 2010 national champion to winless in conference in 12 to playing the national championship in 2013. And Gus Malzahn's a huge part of both of the turnarounds in 10 and 13.
I mean, he's been part of some of the greatest players, games, teams in Auburn history. So that's how he should be remembered for that. And
I hope
he also
welcomed,
went head
to
head.
I hope he's welcomed like a champion, like a hero, every time he visits Auburn for like the rest of his life.
He also went head to head with maybe the best coach in college football history, in Nick Saban, and held his own in a lot of ways.
Was as close
compared,
to even as anybody
compared to anybody else that had to go against him on a regular basis.
And I feel like the last decade has probably made it even more clear as to like how difficult what he was doing is, and for that matter, like Gene Chizik, who's a guy that like. I think that yes, there are some losing seasons in Gene Chizik's history as a head coach. There's also a national championship,
right,
and it's a guy who an undisputed national championship, which is something you have to differentiate now when you talk about national championships. So it's like Gene Chizik's got one where it's like, he was the undisputed national champion in 2010, and if he comes back to Auburn ever, for any reason, it should be celebrated as such.
Yeah.
Gus Malzahn, offensive coordinator of that 2010 national champion, the head coach of the 2013 team, the head coach of the 2017 team that went to the SEC championship game. Like, he's his Auburn bona fides are not in question.
And never and had a losing season.
Yep. And when he had players on offense, he could destroy other teams, right?
Yep.
Especially when he had Nick Marshall and they started running the ball on teams. It was just – it was beautiful to watch. I mean, that's – I love that football when they could just run and
oh,
just
yeah.
run and over just, teams.
Just wear, yes. You just wear teams.
Beautiful
out.
To watch.
What's so funny about that, too, is that before Cam Newton – I don't think there was the reputation of Gus Malzahn.
Oh, no,
needing...
people thought it's going to be a passing yeah. circus. You know, it's going to be an aerial attack.
Mitch Mustain, you know, was the quarterback mm-hmm. with Arkansas, and he you know, he got into disputes with Houston Nutt about how often to run the football with McFadden and Felix Jones. He had two teams at Tulsa that mm-hmm. threw the ball
yeah,
all over.
3,000-yard passers, both.
Yeah, I think multiple 1,000-yard receivers yeah. at Tulsa. And then at Arkansas State in that one year, it's one of the best passing offenses in Sun Belt history before coming to Auburn. And so, I mean, yes, his best seasons at Auburn tended to feature quarterbacks that could run the football, but it's like it's remarkable how he was able to win a lot of football. I mean, even Jarrett Stidham, right? He was able to win football games other ways too, even if it is true that, yeah, the best seasons of his career featured Cam Newton and Nick Marshall, that quarterback.
Now we were talking during the break, and that's not to say that Auburn shouldn't have moved on from Gus. I mean, I don't think people will say that. I hear people going, "Well, we'd be so much better off now," and maybe over the last few years, I would think, yeah, Auburn probably would have had another winning season or so over the last 5 years.
It was cutthroat to fire him in 20 just because it was that COVID season.
Oh, you're right.
And it was, well, I mean, Auburn still had gone 6-4 in that season.
That's right. That is six SEC wins. That is six SEC wins.
Right.
Which Auburn hasn't, I mean, you know, they've only played 8 and now about to go to 9.
But I also.
Come anywhere near that since.
I understand the argument in college athletics where it's like with a coach, you want to be too early rather than too late. Mm-hmm. And if you think you've seen the best of a guy.
And I think that was the case. I think that was the case. I mean, but again.
But Auburn botched the follow-up. That's,
yo,
the, that's
big, big time. There's no question
and
about
suddenly that.
That
can make the other guy look even more brilliant than he was.
But again, best, you know, I wish him the best.
Yeah.
Not just nothing but the best. because yeah, he is a very good person.
Yep.
No question about it. We got a couple of calls holding on. Let's just let's see who we got.
Caller, you're on the air.
Which one?
You.
All right. One of you three guys, tell me something about Malzahn.
Spectre.
Yeah. Tell me why he didn't build a team up around Knicks like he did Marshall. And
That was the major point of Gus, you know, in his troubles. He just didn't quite recruit well enough on the offensive side of the ball to get enough guys into this program that he could really build that powerhouse offense around.
I think one thing, Spectre, as Gus's time continued, is I think teams used the fact that their systems seem to lend themselves better to sending players certain positions to the NFL, and offensive line didn't feel like one of the positions that Gus's offense was a good prep for NFL offensive linemen.
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious about that. I mean, I didn't understand how he could be so successful without an offensive line.
And they I would point out too, Spare, I mean, they still went 9-3. With Knicks as a true freshman in 2019, and the only three teams they lost to were like teams that finished in the top 10. Like it fell off a little bit in that second season, and then the wheels completely fall off after Gus is removed from it. But yeah, I think they were closer than we realized in 2019, mm-hmm. but still missed a couple of the pieces that made that 2013 2014 offense hum.
I know. I begin to wonder that if the portal had a lot to do with it. You know, the portal didn't come into play till 18 or maybe 19, and we wouldn't get any linemen. I mean, you had the high school linemen, but they weren't developing anybody.
They were just coming up short at offensive tackle, especially recruiting wise, and at wide receiver. I think if you look at Bo Nix's when he's a freshman and you know, what he had by his second and third year. It was, I mean, that's not Gus's fault necessarily, but still.
Yeah, I know. What I'm just wondering what would have been if we had a good offensive line behind Nix.
Yeah.
Where we would be at today.
Oh, I think I wonder, I mean, what could have happened if you make some different quarterback decisions between Nick Marshall and Jarrett Stidham. Right? I mean there were times when you felt like the Auburn offense had a lot of what it needed but just didn't have the right guy at the trigger.
Yep.
And you know a couple seasons don't go your way accordingly. So I think it's good question by good question by our pal Spector.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break because we're getting out of here early today. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive. Welcome back in. This is our final segment of the drive here for this Monday because we have Auburn women's basketball coming up shortly. Let's get right back to the phone. And Dak is up next. Hey, Dak.
Hey, guys. Good to hear you today.
What's up?
Well, I'm glad and happy for Gus. It was surprising to me because he's probably got a lot of years left, but I understand in this day and time how college football has changed, why he probably did have something to do with why he retired early.
Not sure.
But he had a brilliant mind for the run game. I mean, just brilliant. One of his downfalls at Auburn was he was so paranoid about certain things, and I think it eventually caught up with him. I actually interviewed his first analyst job that he came open when he first came to Auburn, and I really didn't know him the way I did 3 or 4 years later, and I think I cost myself a job because I talked about how much I loved Auburn and how much the relationship that I had with Coach Blatney and when I coached there and when I played at Auburn. And I think by me mentioning that cost me that position because 3 or 4 years down the road is when I started finding out really how paranoid he was about certain things. And like, for instance, you know, when you got hired, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you had to sign an agreement that you wouldn't talk about anything with the offense when you left. And just like when I interviewed, I had to sign, you know, papers that I wouldn't talk about, you know, the offense in itself. And
I didn't know that.
And it became very strange because a lot of the former Auburn players, you know, as the years went along, it got harder and harder to go watch practice.
Yeah.
You pretty much had to get permission during that time after 3 or 4 years. And, yeah, he was very paranoid about it. And I would have never said this if it wasn't for his retirement. I would have kept that quiet until he did stop coaching. But as far as – I think the difference between him and a Nick Saban is Nick Saban was willing to change his philosophy, and Gus was never
– right.
His philosophy.
Yep.
On his offense,
yep.
And I think it caught up with him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dak. And again, I hate to cut you short, but I mean, we have Auburn women's basketball coming up. Brian, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys are doing.
Appreciate it. And it's going to be a big week. We've got interviews with Coach Golish, coordinators, some assistant coaches coming up this week and next week. Baseball week from Friday gets started. Softball starts Friday. Basketball with Alabama Saturday,
yeah.
So tons of coverage. Check us out, auburnsports.com. You can sign up right there online and follow me on Twitter, /X at BMATAU.
All right, Brian. Always great. Dan, you and Don got it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm gone Wednesday and Friday this week for Troy Business, but I should be in the house for a couple of shows this week.
That's good. Well, Dan and Don have it tomorrow. Auburn basketball is coming up next. And that's going to wrap things up for the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.